theoretically possible.
Why waste time?
But it doesn't make any sense.
Discovery, Houston, press to ATO.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to our wonderful podcast. This is going to be a fun conversation. I honestly, most of the time how we do this is we come up with a title and then we say, all right, let's get deep on this title.
Yeah.
And this was honestly, I think this was the very first time that I actually was like, I don't know what to title this, but there's a conversation that I want to have with
you. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the title, like, we're going to go with it and we're just going to get the title out of this conversation.
Exactly.
So hopefully by the end of it, we'll have that and we'll see. But the conversation that we're having, like, I guess the real, like, the catalyst for this conversation really is the Medicoven guy who bought the people, $69 million, $69.2 million from Christie's, and he's been buying a lot of NFTs, some of the most valuable NFTs in all the land.
And we recently saw a video on him and he presented who he is to the world just recently. And as soon as he did, everyone wanted to like interview him. He was on CNBC. He was all over BBC, every broadcast place possible. And he did an interview for a YouTube video where he explained that he is living a very, very simple life, and actually went into his house, which isn't a house, it's actually an apartment in Singapore. I believe it's probably like 1 to 2 bedrooms based on the look of it. But he said that he lives off of only 1% of everything he owns is actually physical, and therefore 99% of what he owns is digital, which it could be argued that he's viewing all those things that are digital as assets, as investments. Yeah. And I heard that and I thought, dude, is this guy crazy or is this guy freaking on it? I mean, how did he get to where he is today? It's argued that he put all of his money, like not just his savings, like everything he could into cryptocurrency. And it was like $5,000 into Bitcoin at the time. Kept on doing that, repeating it over and over again. Now he's in his 20s or his 30s? He's very, very young.
Yeah.
And he got to the point where he's purchased a digital art piece, literally a JPEG it's called The First 5,000 Days.
Yeah.
And he bought it for 69 point something million dollars.
Yeah.
And is it because he literally is just leaning all the way into his investments and not looking back?
Yeah.
Is that irrational? Is that misunderstood? Like, what are your thoughts?
It's a great question. By the way, I think he's like 32. He's 32 years old. Yeah. And he does. He lives in this, like, I think it's a really nice apartment
in
Singapore.
Modest, it's very simple.
It's modest. It's simple. It's like probably something that John and I would live in.
That's
and
the truth.
Yeah.
And that's maybe why I wanted to do this. Is like, I'm trying to figure out, am I going a little nuts?
Well, I think that what's interesting about him is he's really taken hold of something that we've talked about. We have a whole episode on how to make money invisible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is that a good strategy? And in terms of investment, a lot of times it is. You know, it's not about timing the market. It's not about timing certain things like doing day trades and blah, blah, blah. It's like over the course of 5 years, over the course of 10 years, by not touching it, just letting it be there in certain assets and certain investments,
mm-hmm.
you can reap the rewards, right?
Yeah.
And I think that he's obviously made a huge investment.
Right.
I mean, 99% of all of his assets are in digital assets, right?
Yep.
Digital assets are in cryptocurrency. And obviously he was one of those individuals who like got onto Bitcoin early, created his own little exchange, sold that, but really realized, like, you know, his goal was to just acquire and mine and get Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
While he could. And so that's what he did. And actually, I mean, if you can imagine, like, I mean, I don't know how back he goes, his story goes with Bitcoin, but I know it goes at least to 2013.
Yeah.
2013.
Which is very long time ago.
You just put all
Bitcoin.
Your money into Bitcoin in 2013. Do you know how rich you would be right now? Like, I mean, obviously a lot of people are thinking about that. I mean, I see websites with like, if you put your stimulus money into Bitcoin the first round in 2020, here's how much you could have made.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and that was just 2020.
That was just like, in 2020.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that a Bitcoin at a certain, like, probably in 2013, I would confidently say it was probably less than $1,000 a coin, which is absolutely insane considering it's $63,000. It's a 63 yeah. times your money for in just under 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, what else could you do to get that, right? And so he, you know, not only, he didn't know what Bitcoin would be today. Obviously, no one really did.
No one did, but he must have had some belief in it.
He did.
For him to go all in.
Well, and I think that, like, what I personally connect with this dude on, besides, like, the fact that he lives modestly and he has, like, crazy amount of money. I actually love that about him. Mm-hmm. The thing that I really truly connect with is the fact that he really gets what Bitcoin and Ethereum and NFTs are really all about. And it's not mm-hmm. about the money. That's what the press, that's what the media, that's what people who don't know what blockchain is, that's what they all talk about, right? It's just about the crazy amount of money that people have made, right? They can't believe this. Mm-hmm. He and I know you too, really love this space because of the potential that it has, what it represents about decentralization, about opening access mm-hmm. for other people. Like he even says, you know, in that video that you were just talking about, you know, like it allows me to have access. Like who am I? I was a nobody before Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. What other path could have taken me down the path of when I'm 32 years old, I could buy a $69.2 million piece of art, regardless of if it's digital or not. There's nothing else in this world that could have given him that from India.
Right.
There's nothing else. So it's crazy to think about that, right? So, yep. Of course, like, I think that his belief in the decentralization aspect of it, of the ethos of, like, really what this has the potential to do mm-hmm. for lots of people is kind of disrupt and shake up the current system in terms of, you know, government and wealth. So I think that that part really emphasized, and I just say that because that underscores his belief in what he's doing. I think that he's not just doing it because the media is saying it. He hasn't been doing it. He was doing it when no one was really talking about it. So I think that, like, having a belief in something and sticking to it.
Well, it's not just sticking to it. It's like literally pouring everything you own into it.
Yeah.
All value. Like he does not, he's the only, I've watched a lot of YouTube and all the billionaires that I've ever heard of, they all live in a pretty damn big house.
Yep.
There's very few of them that only have one place. When you're a billionaire, that's 1,000 million. I don't know of any. I'm sure there are some that have maybe one really amazing high-rise penthouse. This guy's place is not that at all. This guy's place, from what we saw, is extremely, extremely simple. There's no, I'm showing off this item here. I did not get that vibe at all.
Well, I think that part of what it is he's also currently building. Like, he's not done yet.
Right. But, like, that's what I'm wondering, though. Like, is he viewing it like so much of a tool that it's like, he's so disconnected from it that he's able to just say, because literally it is very possible. And I think he acknowledges this, that all of his digital assets could completely fail and then they're worth nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he poured every single dollar into it, which was billions of dollars. And he could literally have done anything in the world. He could have, like, literally bought real estate and used that as a new asset, but he chose digital assets. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, this
it's
is
interesting.
Different. This
it is
very, very different.
It is different. Well, I think that, first of all, I mean, and this is based on, like, me really doing my own research on him and listening to him, you know, having these interviews. He really goes even down to the heart of, like, well, why would I buy a physical asset when the government could always just take it away? Mm. And that's something we don't think about. That maybe in the United States of America, we really hold strong on to that. And that is something that's mm-hmm. really special and unique about the United States of America and certain states like Texas, right?
Yeah.
Where property rights are, like, really, really highly valued. And it's like, don't step, you know, like, don't come over here, right? That doesn't exist around the world. And so he's really, sees, like,
who, changing the idea of what is true ownership.
Exactly. That's what it is. That's what it's all about. Is like, what can I truly own? Because, like, you hear a lot of these people talk. I mean, I can't even remember where we heard this, but I think it was like, what's the guy, the dad of the ballers?
Oh, Lonzo Ball?
No.
The dad of the Ball.
Yeah.
Papa Ball.
Papa Ball family, right? He was like, it's all about ownership. right? You do a deal with Nike, you don't own it. Nike owns it.
He owns a business called
Big Baller
Triple
Brand.
Big Baller Brand.
And that's controversial, but I think that, like, you know, his brand in itself is like, but I think what he's really trying to emphasize is like, dude, like, look at how many athletes have gotten taken advantage of from all these other brands.
They don't own it. They own nothing. And that's the big difference that he was emphasizing. And you believe in that.
Well, and you look at who are the billionaires, they own stuff. They don't get royalties out of things. They own it. And so whether that's stock or, you know, voting rights or whatever it is, like, there's like lots of different things. But I think with Medicovin, he's really seeing it as like, well, who could take my digital assets away from me? I own them. The only way that I could lose them all is if the internet gets shut down. Who the hell, what the hell would what would we all do if the internet shut down?
Or if, I don't know.
No one's going to shut down the internet.
What are the different ways that it could go down? So if there's a, I've heard this, and this is kind of a weird concept, but if the sun has there's a special amount of like radiation that hits the earth in one spot, it shuts down all those microchips or kills all the microchips in that area. So all the technology.
Yeah, like a sun flare or something.
And if that happened, though, the argument is, well, cryptocurrencies can still keep going because it's not like the sun can hit all of Earth at once and the servers are spread all over Earth.
Yeah.
So it would make those computers that still did not get harmed that much more valuable. They'll probably be able to mine that much more.
Well, that's the whole thing about blockchain. Right. That's like the value of it, is that it's not in one centralized location. It's actually dispersed around the world.
Right.
Like,
but the other question is, it could be possible that someone could hack it, which is a crazy concept. I mean, it's never been demonstrated that it is possible, but quantum computing could do that. And then the ownership of those assets could be manipulated, you know, like who owns them now?
Yeah.
And then the final thing, though, is that I do think that there is a really big benefit that we haven't discussed of owning digital assets versus physical assets. And that is the fact that a digital asset, you don't have to worry about the item deteriorating or anything like that. The digital asset, when you buy it, it's going to be what it was from the very first point that you purchased it.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're buying a house or a car, you got to do a lot of maintenance, and it's a guarantee that repairs will be a part of the maintenance of that asset, including a painting too. You're still going to have to take epic care of it, probably less care with certain paintings maybe, but it, I guess, once again, depends on the art itself, right?
Yeah.
So in the digital world, you don't have to worry about any of that, correct?
That's true.
So
I think so.
I get his point of view, but I want to go back to like the main question is like, is this guy crazy or is this guy doing it right and we should be inspired?
Well, I think that his risk level and tolerance has come from, well, it's much higher than most people, especially in the digital world. But I think that we've met people who are like super Bitcoin maximalists. They say, anytime I get fiat, whatever that fiat is, whether that's euro or pound or USD, they throw it right into Bitcoin regardless of the price. Like that's mm-hmm. what they do. And that's really interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Like that's not what I do, but like, I understand those people because we've had really interesting conversations with them. And, I think the truth is no one really knows. And his risk level is super high based on his own experience.
His risk aversion would be the
measure.
Yeah,
sorry. Yeah, his risk aversion is low.
Yes,
he's not risk averse in terms of digital assets.
Right. So what do you think that we need to like feel more comfortable taking bigger risks? Like what's your vibe just with us two?
I feel like
in general to the total population, a lot of people are like, dude, you guys are huge risk takers. But like, should we be inspired by the guy who only 1% of what he owns is physical and everything he owns is digital? And like people, to me, that even took me back, but I almost did connect at the same time by looking at his apartment. I was like, dude, that's kind of crazy. The money didn't change you at all. Like at all.
I love that.
And he's keeping, it's not like he's converting more money than he needs to into actual fiat currency or Singaporean dollars.
Yeah.
He is probably just doing the minimum. I don't think he has like savings and retirement fund. If 99% is there, he's going all in on it, right?
Yeah.
Is that where we need to be? Or is he a loony?
No, I don't think he's a loony.
He's thinking differently.
He is thinking differently, and
Apple
I like that.
Computers holler.
I like that. And I think that it's not just him that we've met. Like, we haven't met him, obviously, not yet.
We met him in the YouTube.
in YouTube. Yeah, yes. That's basically it.
Or but the metaverse.
He definitely, I love and respect actually his whole approach to it. I think that honestly, anyone who is humble, I mean, to me, if I were in his position, if mm-hmm. I had been doing this since 2013 and it was like, obviously this is the way I'm going to make the wave. Right? That's what he was saying. He's like, I'm going to make the wave by going in hard on NFTs, right? Yeah. Based on all of this crypto I've been acquiring at a really low price over time.
We could expand it more than just going in hard. He's going all in.
Yeah. He's going all in. And so I think, and he's also in the process of building. So if I were in his position, I would say, why would I spend fiat money on a penthouse suite mm-hmm. when I'm really trying to build something that is going to exist beyond my own existence?
Right.
Like, what about that penthouse suite is actually going to make me feel more fulfilled?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about that all the time, like material stuff. Like, why? Like, why mm-hmm. do you want to make $1 million? Like, we know people who are millionaires and people who aren't even millionaires who live in these like really crazy nice apartments or houses, and you're just like, okay, that's something that you value, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in the process of building, literally you could not care less, like, what are you eating? I don't know, whatever is in front of me, like, I'm just eating to live, I'm not living to eat, right? And then also, like, you know, I need a good quiet space to work, and then I need to be close to the action, or at least have good internet access, you know, or whatever, especially in the digital world. Now, do I think he's crazy? No, I don't think he's crazy. I actually think he's doing what was in the book that we both read and loved, and when we were living in Morocco, was The Millionaire Next Door, right? Where the millionaire next door invests his or her own money into different investments and just lets that happen and lives below their means. And by living below your means and continuing to invest your money into things that will actually make your money grow, you become a millionaire next door to people who don't even know you are a millionaire, because it doesn't look like you're a millionaire. You just are living in a normal house.
That's the one translation that I do think carries over in the book, is that you are a millionaire, but no one knows. And I love that part about it. Like, I really feel connected with that, because it does make you think, like, well, why do you need this? You know, like, what's the value of this? Is this an asset or is this a liability? But what is different in that book compared to this story of Medikovin is he is actually beyond, like, he's not... living below your means as a billionaire means like you got to live off of like $4 million a year.
Yeah.
And so he's like, he's not in that realm, you know?
Yeah,
like,
but when you're spending $250,000 on art every week, I think you're getting there.
But that's not his means though. But I see what you're saying.
You know what
though.
I mean? Yeah, like he's living way below a billionaire's means in order to continue to build. Like that's a requirement to build. If you overextend your own, you know, spending and you're trying to build at the same time, it's going to go slower. So if you want it to speed things up, you continue to live way below your means and just keep building.
Right.
I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't know. I think even about us, like even people who are close to us, like that's something that like you and I fully understand, fully recognize is absolutely a huge part of if you want to really shoot for the moon, you have to continue to live below your means. And who cares? Like, who am I trying to impress?
Right.
You know, like if I'm really trying to build something and I see the vision, even if I'm a billionaire, I still, I want that to happen. I want to be able to see it in my lifetime.
Yeah.
You know,
but it's so much more than just like living below your means. I understand like when you want to be seen. And I think that's the flaw that people have when like that. And that's the big lesson I took from The Millionaire Next Door is like, why do you need this and this and this and this? Like, do you want others to view you like this? And I think that's like the big message is like, you're not trying to like show off here. Like it actually doesn't help you. That's actually hindrance if you try to participate in that rat race.
Right.
But when it comes to the idea of going all in, like what percentage of money should people put into other assets versus going towards what maybe like a little bit more of their comfort in life would be, or like going into the nicer things of life,
or like even going into stocks and a retirement fund or something
those are investments. Like, how much should go all into that, or how much should go into the like crazy idea? Like, what should that distribution kind of look like? I support the fact that he's the biggest believer in this, and he's creating waves by making these massive moves in it, and it's making the whole, because he's a whale, you know, of a yeah. of a crypto king now.
For sure.
He is able to make waves just by moving money into different different digital assets. But what about like the idea of like someone who doesn't have that much money to be able to, just because you moved it, you're going to affect the whole market? How should those individuals view their attempt to go after the like long-term big picture? I'm shooting for the stars here. Do you think that they should, like, he got to where he is because he put all of his savings, 5,000, into yeah. in 2013. Do you think that's required in order to get there? Like, do you think that it's a good idea for us to be like, rather than putting him, like spreading them out, just go really hard on one thing? Like, is that the way it's freaking done? And just betting on, like, we're getting deep now.
We are getting deep. Well, okay, so we're talking about the difference of, like, should you be hedging your bets and diversifying your portfolio, or yeah. should you really be, like, going all in on something? And right. I think, like, why do you hedge your bet? Like, why do you want to diversify your portfolio? Because you want to, if something goes wrong with one asset or one investment, that mm-hmm. you've got enough to make up for that and you're still okay, right? Mm-hmm. If you invest it all into one thing, if that goes wrong, if something goes wrong with it, you're shit out of luck, basically, yeah, yeah, yeah. right? So I think...
Yeah, this is what I want to hear.
So for... I think that, first of all, number one, rule number one of all investment is do your due diligence. Do yeah. not listen to us. Do not listen to a YouTuber. Do not listen to a podcaster that says that he or she knows more than anyone else.
We're trying to figure it out ourselves.
Well, it's right? this is for us, yeah. So, yeah. But I do think that that's a part of it, too. That's part of my answer is okay. the due diligence. And I think okay. that he did his due diligence.
Enough
I think
for
that
him enough to feel for confident. Him.
Okay, I'm sorry, but if anyone invested, if anyone put all of their money into Bitcoin in, say, 2010, mm-hmm. right? Okay. You put all your money into Bitcoin and like you didn't look back yeah. and you just, I don't know what you're doing now, but you just did that, right? Yeah. And you continue to do only that.
Yeah.
I mean, and for you to see from 2010 to 2021, the amazing explosion of your own investment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not quite sure if there's, and I'm, don't quote me on this, but I don't know if there's anything else out there in my lifetime that has had that exponential
yeah,
crazy growth and game changing, right?
But so, if someone did that, would you say that it was foresight or like how a lot of that has to be luck at 2010? You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. Also, I mean, no, I don't think it's luck. I think all that right. there were a lot of people who were mining. If you were mining, yeah. you were getting Bitcoin for free, basically. I mean, you had to invest into the machinery and you had to like program and do all this stuff, but like you're basically gaining, you're acquiring fees from people doing transactions on
in exchange for electricity costs.
That's yeah. And so if you were able to figure out that equation early on, like you got Bitcoin at such like, it's crazy, right? Yeah. So and that's not luck, that you actually worked to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would say people who bought in early, if they weren't a miner, yeah, I mean, it was a big risk, but look, in all investments, the highest rewards come with the highest risk.
I think we need to do another episode on that because I want to challenge that. I wrote some content for a class recently, and that was I reviewed it, and that was one of the statements, and I was like, oh man, I wonder if there is one investment I can think of that didn't require massive risk and gave massive rewards. That would be a whole, like, I think that's
that would
a 30
be a fun episode to actually, that would be a really fun episode if we could actually find something. But I think overall, mm-hmm. you could just say in general, mm-hmm. usually the higher risk investments come with higher rewards than right. the low risk investments
right.
do. Okay.
I agree.
So, I mean, some people saw Bitcoin as low risk. I mean, if it was just like $100 here or there, like who cares, you know, just throw it in, no big deal, like good for you.
Yeah.
But this guy, I think, when you, and then you and I have experienced this probably in the last few months, mm-hmm. when you really take the time to dive in to what blockchain really is, like mm-hmm. what, not just Bitcoin, not just Ethereum, but like the technology of blockchain and its potential and what people are trying to do with it.
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
you really, if you can get there, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of learning, a lot of engaging, a lot of like processing. If you can really get down to the core of like the purpose of this is decentralization, this can actually change this, or that, mm. or that, right? And you can latch onto one thing that you're like, this is the thing that mm-hmm. I want to, because there's a bunch of them,
yeah,
but this
yeah.
is the thing. I think he found that. He found that through experience. And so I think, you know, some people could see him as crazy and be like, well,
but he's misunderstood. In that sense. So in that sense, it may also be argued that he isn't really much of a risk taker because he has that vision. You know, like if he knows something that no one else knows, then that wouldn't necessarily be risk.
Well, it's all relative, right?
Right.
Like at the time in 2013, how few people even understood NFTs.
All right, so here's the deepest question of the conversation,
which
is based on this conversation, what advice do you think we need to give to each other? Like, do we need to like believe in ourselves more? Like, do you think we need to like what's the solution? I mean, I can think of just as many people who have made it huge by going into Bitcoin. I can think of so many different individuals who went all in, did their due diligence, and felt like this is the future, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So like, what is the advice based on this conversation that you would give to us as we're on this journey? And I will say, like, if we go to episode one, we've kind of been taking it in like steps to get to this point where we're at now. And I definitely would say now more than ever, I'm like really testing my abilities of like, okay, fuck it, let's do this. You know, and it's hard. It's really hard, especially when you're like, dude, there's some consequences with this. And sometimes it's like, I don't know. What's your thoughts? You're making me go bonkers.
I love it. I love it so much. I would say the advice I would give to us.
Yeah. If you can give it to us, you know, versus just myself.
I would say to us, take more risk.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, look, the PhD wasn't a risk.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that just was a shit ton of really hard work and like just achieve this goal, get there. You can get it done.
It was very clear cut. If you stay on this path, do this,
then you can achieve this.
You will get this by this date.
And we even pushed that even further.
Really,
we pushed it to be earlier than most. Okay. Yeah. So we tried to condense what
you did.
Well, you did too, relative to people in your program. So
sure.
I would say that was something that we had to get over, was like the pattern of doing that, right? Of just like, what's the goal? We need to get to that goal, right? Mm-hmm. I think that at the core of us, when we really know something, and come on, we don't just like read a few things here or there and like do clickbait. Like, it's hours and hours and hours of consumption.
Time. Yeah.
You and I. Okay, like this is actually like the first time I think we've ever said this on the podcast. Like for the last 3 months, like this is what we've immersed ourselves into.
Yeah.
Is this world.
Everyone knows this.
Yeah, but at this time, if you've listened to like NFTs and stuff, like what do you think we've been to? We've literally been...
What do you think? We're on the beach of Treasure Island,
guys? I mean, we are, but look, after doing enough due diligence, it's time to pull the trigger, right? And you got to have confidence in yourself. And you got to know also, like, part of the game is failing. Like, look, how many times do we talk about failing? So one item might not have been, like, if we buy an NFT, maybe it might not sell for very much for the next year or so, right? Mm-hmm. But we have it. So what do you want to do with it now, right? The cool thing about digital assets, and I know that this is something that Medikoven relates to, too, just through interviews I've listened to him, about... like once you own something that's digital, you instantly start thinking like, how else could I use this? Like, what could this be used for? I'm not just gonna like let it sit in my profile and like, because there's no social media of like who has the coolest NFTs. I mean, you got to dig deep to know who has NFTs, and there are capital groups who are acquiring NFTs at rapid rate.
Right.
So like, you really got to be smart, and we analyze these things, but I think that you can analyze it so much, and then you got to like, I'm sorry, it does come down to that gut feeling that of like, you know what, do you believe in it or not? Do you believe in yourself or not? Do you believe that you've actually done the due diligence and work it takes to get to the point where you're ready to buy this?
Or where you're willing to put every single dollar you've earned into something that people don't understand.
Yeah.
And you believe in it more than everyone, or more than the majority.
I would say doing it at this time is probably the lowest risk level of any other time. I would, like, Bitcoin, come on.
Yeah.
We all agree. I would say if you don't agree, you don't know about it yet.
Lower
then.
Reward perhaps as well.
Perhaps.
That's interesting.
Maybe. But I would say if you were if you were in this in 2010, 2012, 2013.
Very big risk.
Huge high risk. Now.
Very big reward. Congratulations.
Yeah, I still think it's a high risk. I mean, I think that I have to remind myself a lot of times, like, even though we've immersed ourselves into it and we've actually connected and like we really talk a lot to people who have been in this longer than us, mm-hmm. that just like just because your own environment is very much immersed into it doesn't mean that everyone else out there in the world even understands what the hell you're talking about. Yeah. So there's still opportunity out there, my friends. There's still opportunity that we're going to seek. And so my advice to us is to feel confident mm-hmm. in ourselves yeah. and really believe in this future. Like I can't imagine, there's nothing else that I believe in more that will disrupt the world like blockchain will.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Bitcoin or Ethereum, I'm saying blockchain. So yeah. decentralization is a surprise. So that's a prediction. I mean, in a couple of years, it'll be interesting to hear this back. We'll see what happens, yeah. but I hope that we take that advice. I don't know. Obviously if we say like, no, this doesn't feel right, then it doesn't feel right. But I would say push yourself a little bit more to say, you know what? I know this.
Right.
I think this is the right thing to do. So, yeah. and that's advice to you all, my friends, like yep. not investment advice, but just like, you know what, do your due diligence and believe in yourself. If you mm-hmm. have the knowledge and you really have a belief behind it, it's part of the game. Play right. the game. Know it's going to, some things are going to fail. Some things are going to go awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, have fun while you're doing it. So
yep.
I appreciate this conversation. Good, deep conversation and really yes. good question, my love.
We will do another deep round tomorrow. And we're excited for you all to join yeah. us. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate you. And we will talk to you then.
Bye.